So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, man.
Seen it ducked underneath it. Oh, oh, here it comes. He got it.
No way.
He got him.
F you.
F you. The cover.
One, two, three.
Is the champion.
Oh, man. The thumbs down by Batista. Batista now. Taking out the champion. Batista.
Welcome to Review Away, this special Thursday edition of Review Away. How are you, Mr. Ting?
I'm very, very well.
Very, very well.
I guess.
Are you too well?
No, just very well.
Well, that's great. Did you miss me? Did you miss doing Review a Raw on Monday night?
Yeah.
No?
No, I didn't actually.
Well, it wasn't that great a show, so I would imagine.
No. The thing is, I enjoyed for once just being able to watch the show and not having to focus my attention on every single little detail and try to come up with something stupid or witty to say after every segment.
Does it feel like you're working when you're watching Raw most weeks?
Kind of, because I can't. It's hard to just simply sit down and enjoy the show when you have to focus on a lot of like when I was watching Raw on Monday, I was on Twitter, I was tweeting, and I just kind of had it on in the background while still paying attention to what was going on. But I was able to just kind of more relax and just enjoy the show like a normal person.
What do you think about people timing pro wrestling matches?
Oh, those people are kind of weird.
Yeah. I admit I'm kind of weird.
No, those people are so weird that they deserve to have jobs in this industry, hosting shows and becoming journalists. That's the type of weird that you want.
If you came when we go to WrestleMania,
yeah.
If I was taking notes down throughout the show,
yeah.
Would you be like, man, I wish I went with someone better?
No,
to this show.
When we're at WrestleMania, we're there to do work. Like, we're there to actually, you know, do our jobs. And so I think I would rather somebody who did their job rather than somebody who was just there to mark out.
So you won't have a problem if I have my iPhone out?
I don't give a shit. You could do whatever you want.
Timing our matches.
You could do whatever you want. You know,
I really hope this year when we go to WrestleMania, April 6th, the same day as our Review Away listener meetup happening at noon Central Time. I hope that the setup is kind of like WrestleMania 28, where we were in that box, but the windows were open.
Yeah.
So you got the feel of the crowd, whereas last year at MetLife Stadium, it was all enclosed. So it was like soundproof, and we're watching it on a TV.
Yeah. Basically what John means, if you can't picture it, it's that
like we're in a skybox, essentially, with glass.
We were encased inside behind a window. And you could understand it because New Jersey compared to Miami.
Much colder.
Yeah. So I suppose that's the reason. This year in New Orleans, I hopefully – the Superdome?
Yes.
Hopefully it'll be more of an open atmosphere because, I mean, pro wrestling, you really have to hear the crowd. You know, that's really half of it.
To me, the highlight, what I will always remember about WrestleMania 28 – was the heat for Triple H and The Undertaker, that Hell in a Cell match. That, to me, it's that and Hogan Rock as the most heated matches I have ever been to live.
For sure.
And I wouldn't have got that same feel if we were enclosed that year in Miami.
It wasn't just enclosed. It was like it was soundproof.
Exactly. It was like you fully had to go by the audio on the TVs.
Yeah, unfortunate.
That said, the trade-off was all the guys that weren't on the card were also in this box with us. So we had the legends up there, all the NXT guys, and some very sad performers such as Zack Ryder, your favorite story, and my just absolutely heartbreaking story of Kofi Kingston and a child asking him when he's wrestling tonight. And Kofi instructing him, not tonight.
Oh, that's kind of sad. But at least all those guys will probably get a spot this year. They didn't do a Battle Royal last year, did they? Did they do one?
No. But there were a lot of... Remember last year, there was the big outrage that Cesaro was left off the card. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember if they... I don't think it was a Battle Royal. I don't think so. Yeah, you don't remember the unimportant stuff.
Yeah, but hopefully, a lot of those guys will at least get.
It seems this year, way that like everyone's on the card between the Battle Royal, and you'll probably get a multiple divas match. It seems like just about everybody is going to be on this year's card.
And I don't mind that, as long as I think sometimes you might have matches that feel completely meaningless that are just there to kind of appease people.
Like they could have easily done Sheamus versus Christian again, or Sheamus versus Del Rio.
Unnecessary. No, but, a battle royal is almost the perfect situation. Just toss all these guys. Nobody has any real spotlight, but at the same time, you all fulfill a rather, a necessary role as part of a 30-man thing.
We're going to get into WrestleMania 21 here, a show from 2005 in Los Angeles, California.
I do have to ask, though, why do you feel the need to time when I feel like a lot of that stuff is already up online? Like, I feel like a lot of people time these themselves.
I find the opposite. I find no one times matches, and I usually just like to get a sense. First of all, listen, I will fully admit, when I sit down and watch wrestling, the idea of just sitting down on my couch and watching something is not appealing to me. I need to be doing something at the same time, whether it is taking notes, and maybe timing matches is just a byproduct of that. But I am not, don't feel, you poor thing, you have to take all these notes and stuff. I prefer doing it this way. I prefer watching wrestling when I'm taking notes. I do it for all MMA stuff I watch. I do it for all wrestling stuff I watch.
Would you ever take notes for like a movie that you're watching just to kind of keep your attention, or a TV show, another TV show?
No, those I can do. But when it comes to wrestling and MMA, I feel well, A, it's a part of my job, and I will probably, odds are, be discussing what I am watching in some form. Whereas a television show, I'm watching it, I'm taking it in, and essentially at the end of it, that's it. I'm done with that show forever.
Interesting. What if it was like some type of like instructional video that you're watching? Like, I don't know, maybe like a TED Talk or something.
Again, I don't really feel a need to ever repeat what I'm watching in there or analyze it.
Hmm.
Maybe if I was going on a talk show to discuss.
No, but that's interesting.
A TED Talk.
I'm much the same way in that, this week I didn't have to take notes, but I was all over Twitter just, because I had to do something to kind of keep my focus and keep my attention. But I feel like sometimes I watch movies and I'm like, I'm kind of just halfway watching it and not even really studying it. Maybe I should just start taking notes.
Like, I remember things more if I write them down.
Yeah.
I can watch a movie and within an hour, I'll forget half the movie. Whereas if I write it down, it's more ingrained.
So would it be weird if I took my notepad out to like the movie theater and just all of a sudden started taking notes?
You laugh, but I go to plenty of press screenings where that's exactly what people do. They have that light that goes onto their hat or something, or they have some little... Yeah. And they're jotting down notes because they have to write reviews about this stuff in the paper. They have to remember key points or a quote here or there within the movie. I mean, that's not unheard of at all.
But that's for work. I mean, just, for my own personal enjoyment.
Well, why would you take notes if it wasn't for your work?
So I can get something more out of it, whereas I go in casually to like a movie screening or something, or some type of speech. It's just like in one ear, out the other. But if I want to retain it better...
I find if there's a movie I watch that I really enjoy, I go home and I'll read other people's reviews of it and just other different subjects that come out of a movie that people are discussing, because I'm genuinely interested. If it's based on a real story, you go back and you learn more about this particular story, and was any of this embellished for the movie? Was any of it just completely made up? I get very curious and thus want to learn more about a subject.
Maybe I'll start timing scenes.
Sure.
How long does this scene last?
You can mock me all you want, Waiting. I'm going to...
As I see your videotape, VHS collection, the John Pollock Network.
Well, the John Pollock Network, now that I'm down to one laptop, has it's already out of business.
Oh, no.
It's having worse problems than Xbox users for the WWE Network.
So is the... Like, your laptop died last week on this very show, actually.
Yeah, it's been a week since it died.
And do you still have what you saved?
Like, what I've got my hard drive. I've got my hard drive, but I'm looking at buying a new one. Sell me on the MacBook. Should I make the jump to a MacBook?
Well, your wife is actually having this conversation with me. She I'm a Mac user, of course, and so is she. And she was trying to sell. She was trying to discuss with me what you should be getting next. And ultimately, it's up to you. It's up to what you do. I will say,
I'm not closing the door, but it's tiny for the Mac. It's only the transition. I dread that.
Well, the transition won't take you long at all. Just like how I feel the transition from Mac to PC won't take you long either. To me, honestly, I'm a lifelong Mac user at home, but I use PCs at work, and it's like I know my
way
around.
You're ambidextrous. You're ampi-computerous.
Sure. Yeah, but for me, it's like they're both largely the same, and I feel like your Mac will probably. I don't even want to get into this debate, to be honest with you, because it's just...
I'm not having a debate.
This is, like, a bigger debate than, like, Israel and Palestine for a lot of people. So, use whatever you want. What programs are you going to be using?
Main thing is audio editing.
Uh-huh.
Will that be... I hear the audio... The editing on MacBook is pretty easy.
Depends what program, again.
What do you edit on? Just Final Cut?
I edit my video on Adobe Premiere.
On Premiere?
Yeah, I used to use Final Cut, but now I've switched. But actually, I edit all my audio on Premiere as well. But, like, what do you use on PC? What's your program?
Sony Vegas.
Okay, I'm not sure if that's available on a Mac or not, but you'll find an equivalent. You just basically want Vegas, though, right? Like, you don't want to switch to Audition or anything like that?
No, not really. No, I mean, I will if I have to.
Yeah, the nerdiest conversation we're going to have.
No, I bet you there's lots of people who are listening who are taking notes right now.
I mean, of course.
See what I did
there? They're timing our conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's also GarageBand. That's a pretty user-friendly thing that a lot of people use for podcasting on a Mac. But like I said, I feel like... Both are kind of largely the same. With the Mac, you might find a little bit more stability and maybe slightly more protection from viruses, although I hear you can still get viruses. But no matter what, John...
Is a MacBook more durable? That's what I hear.
No, not necessarily. Well, you mean from like spilled tea on
yes.
the keyboard? I wouldn't say so.
No.
I'd say if...
Have you ever spilled something on a laptop?
I've never done that.
Never?
John. Never done that. And let me just say...
I blame the tea, not because I feel if I had coffee, it wouldn't have...
Oh, is that right?
Coffee's been done well by me.
Well,
and
I don't know...
Tea.
I don't know if you remember this, John, but there's this one time where we're on a train on our way to Ottawa, and I'm sitting next to John. I'm like half asleep. And then I wake up. I see this man. He's ordered a coffee.
Oh, no.
He's holding his... And he's got his laptop open in front of him, of course, on his lap. Oh, so there's no place to put your coffee. Where do I put my coffee?
Oh, fuck.
He puts his coffee right next to the trackpad in that little open space next on the laptop. I'm looking over, and this guy's trying to put his milk, pour his little cup of milk while resting his tea or his coffee on his fucking laptop. And I just, like, I tried to take my phone out and take a photo, but it was kind of too late.
On a train.
On a train, on a moving train. So I can't say I was really surprised what happened last week, John. So and
I wasn't on a train, nor was this thing on my trackpad.
Yeah, I know, but you seem to have a history of like knocking shit over, knocking spilled drinks over. You have.
Wait a minute, when have I ever spilled a drink on something before?
You have spilled multiple beers on myself. You spilled either your beer or you spilled my beer on myself multiple times.
When?
In the past.
I don't recall this at all.
Well, maybe you have a very selective memory when it comes to that stuff.
I clearly do because I didn't write it down.
You can, yeah, that's the problem. You can ask me. You can ask Jay. Like you've done this multiple times, and so that's another reason why I don't.
So
feel
I
like,
deserved it, is what you're saying.
You kind of did in a way.
Oh shit!
And that's the reason why I feel like Mac or PC, it doesn't really matter. You, no matter what you get, you need to find like the waterproof computer. Maybe buy like a waterproof case for your.
Do
computer.
Those exist? I'd love to know.
Somebody could tell me.
I would love if someone invented that.
I'm sure there's like a waterproof...
It's going to cost me a lot of money for this non-waterproof computer that I had last week.
I'm sure there's like a waterproof keyboard case.
You know what killed it? What really did the damage was the fact that I restarted it, and I thought it was fine, and we finished the podcast.
Maybe
that was it.
That was probably the problem, too.
That was me just trying
to... We had to finish the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. What can you do?
Priorities, folks. So that computer died for you last week.
Yeah.
So that we could review a March 2005 edition of Raw featuring a face-to-face, which I swear I just howled when I saw that Raw this week was headlined by man-to-man conversation.
Yeah, I like face-to-face better.
Face-to-face?
Yeah.
Not man-to-man?
Yeah.
All right. Face-to-face. Well, there was none of that at WrestleMania 21, though we saw a number of men face another group of men. Sunday, April the 3rd, 2005, from Los Angeles, California. Had you joined the Law by this point?
No, I don't think so. I didn't start with the Fight Network until May of that year.
Okay, so you were not part of this. This was our last... I just dropped something.
Oh, God.
This was our first... Our last Law without Way before our big draft pick would come. So the show begins with Howard Finkel introducing Lillian Garcia to sing America the Beautiful, featuring backup singers for her. This was all out for Lillian. And
is she the one who still does it today?
Yes. She left for a while, came back.
Yeah. And, like, did they have somebody special last year, or has it been Lillian these past couple of years?
I want to say someone... Usually they do bring in someone. There's been the odd year that they have Lillian do it. They might just go with Lillian now. I can't recall. So I love this because as she starts singing... They cut to this dude in the crowd eating popcorn. Just a weird cutaway.
How disrespectful.
And then footage of the talent at the tribute for the troops. Then they're chanting USA at the end, and they unveil a screen to cut to the opening video, because this was the WrestleMania Goes Hollywood-themed WrestleMania, which we talked about last week, all the different movie trailers that they cut for this. And here was the big one. It was just various trailers spliced together. And then they go into this new one based off of Gladiator, and it leads to Steve Austin revealing himself in the pit, stating that my name is Stone Cold Steve Austin, and tonight I unleash hell.
This is cool. This is one that they left just for this, just for WrestleMania, that we hadn't seen before.
And also, I don't know if you had the DVD version or not. That's what I watched on. And for this particular DVD, they did have the Soundtrack of Our Lives theme on the DVD, which is rare when they have commercial music.
What song was it?
Big Time.
Nope.
Not present on yours?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't know. Wasn't Big Time the theme from the
It was also Peter the Gabriel? Song the next year, but they used Peter Gabriel. So back-to-back years, it was the same song title, different songs. Mm. The announcers were Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler for Raw, and then Michael Cole and Taz on SmackDown. And do you know, Way, who we're going to be joined by on today's particular show? We've got guests.
I have no clue. Who's this person you've been keeping locked up in this room?
There are actually two doors, if you would actually pay attention. Whoops. Behind door number one is 2005 Dave Meltzer, who was on The Law right afterwards.
Hey, Dave. How's it going?
Yeah, that's Dave. And then behind the door further down the hall on the right... It is John Cena in conversation with a very young John Pollock.
Wow.
I didn't even want to run this interview, but that's what I do for this show, folks. John Cena, about a month and a half after this particular WrestleMania, discussing his first run as WWE champion and discussing the match placement of himself and JBL on this card, not going on last.
This was the first guest to appear at the Fight Network, was he not? The first celebrity?
He would have been maybe the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, he showed up with his cousin, The Trademark.
Right.
And that began a summer of multiple interviews I conducted with John Cena. We had like a good relationship going to the point that at this golf course, he came up to me.
Wow.
Hey, John, how's it going? We were the best of friends in 2005.
Whoa. And you think he would still recognize you?
No, probably not.
Maybe he's secretly following your career, the rise of your career.
I don't know about that.
Just like you've been
following. He got upset at me after one particular interview.
Oh, what happened?
It was right before WrestleMania 22, and we were talking, because this was when he was getting lots of boos. Mm-hmm. And I started talking to him about, you know, this is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, in pro wrestling, this can be great for a change in character, where you're getting this negative reaction, and you give people the opposite of what you had been giving with a babyface. And he came back and just explained to me that, you know, this is 2006. It's not about baby faces and heels anymore. And then he went on to his MySpace blog and proceeded to write this huge blog without naming me, but citing our interview and what I brought up.
Why would he get upset at that?
I don't know.
It seems very silly.
Yeah.
He's probably been very sick of the question, though. Maybe at that point he was like...
Maybe he was. Enough. Fair enough.
Maybe, and so you don't have to think of yourself as the only person who might have...
Oh, I did not take it personally. Yeah. I think people are still talking about John Cena turning heel how many years later?
Yeah.
So, and then I didn't talk to him again until, I guess, last year during that famous press conference we did at WrestleMania where I asked him a few questions.
Okay.
Remember that press conference?
Yeah. I
was the guy right after, what's your strategy this year against The Rock?
Oh, God, one of the worst things. Like, I remember
have you changed your strategy?
I was just sitting there. I was in the front row trying to shoot, and John was in the back, and I was just texting John, like, where are we? What is this place?
Did we ever run that?
I threw it online, but it was just honestly so stupid, and by that point it was dated anyway. I didn't really get the point of that. By the time that we aired it, it was just so silly that... There's nothing worth running. It was just all these kayfabe answers in between.
I was really happy with the answer I got out of him, actually, because I asked him about all the different performers that are on their first WrestleMania this year, if any have kind of stuck out at this point that he's been impressed with going into WrestleMania.
I'm trying to anticipate all the questions we're going to hear this time, this year. Oh, man.
I hope Bray Wyatt is the wrestler thrown out there. They just did like a steady stream of them coming out. And yeah, and John Cena said, no one has impressed him yet. He's got to wait till after. Anyway,
that was actually one of the good ones, yeah.
He gave a good answer. He's like, you know, to be honest, no one has really jumped out right now to him. Yeah. And anyway, that was John Cena later on in the show, a 2005 interview as we travel back some 9 years ago. This event was 9 years ago, Way.
Oh, my God.
We were 11. First matchup of the night was a battle of tag team champions, a first and maybe only in WrestleMania history, Eddie Guerrero against Rey Mysterio. And this match, Way, had a lot of expectation going into it. They were babyfaces at the time, and everyone sensed Eddie was eventually going to turn heel. Mm. And, of course, this brought back comparisons to their match at many matches together, but the Halloween Havoc 97 match is the one that stands out the most. And this was many years later at this point. It's 7 years after the fact. Eddie was certainly beaten down at this point, but a lot of hope for this match going in.
It's many years later, but also working in a different environment with a different style.
I just realized a great point I'm going to make at the end of this match.
Okay.
That's going to make all of you people criticizing me laugh. Guerrero, he came out, had this like Grand Theft Auto style shirt as he came out in his lowrider. This was in LA as well. So, I mean, a market that you would think very much receptive here to these two. This was where Worlds Collide took place. Rey comes out, this half Mexican, half American flag outfit. And the match begins. There was a catapult, and Rey flew over the top to the floor. Eddie then gets launched upside down and into the ropes, which was actually a spot he took years ago and actually messed up his hamstring or something. And Guerrero goes for a surfboard. Jimmy Corderas was the third man in the ring for this match. And as Eddie applies the surfboard, Corderas counts Guerrero's shoulders down and then into a loose STF, works over the arm of Rey.
You know what I've always found weird about the that surfboard, the inverted surfboard?
Yes.
The guy trying to put the surfboard on, one of the things he does is he slaps the ribs of the victim to try to get the victim to raise the arms. And it's like one of those commonly accepted psychologies in pro wrestling, but I just wonder where it came from because I'm trying to test this on myself. I'm trying to slap my own self in the ribs and it's... My arms aren't moving that.
Okay, that's because you know what's happening. I'm gonna blindside you one of these days. I'm gonna come in from behind and slap you in the ribs, and I guarantee your arms.
No, it should be involuntary. Here, try. Actually, just try it on me right now.
Okay, turn around, and I'm not gonna tell you when I'm gonna hit your ribs.
All right.
You were expecting. Okay, Wei did not move an inch there.
I just gasped.
But let's mark this down for a promo.
It didn't make me move my arms back.
Well,
I think that's so silly.
Maybe it's the idea that you're reaching back to grab his arm so you don't do it again.
Hmm.
Listen, maybe, I have thought about this as well. It's not like you're... I have not thought of this as well. I think there's an explanation for it.
All right.
We'll one day find out. Ray then hits a corkscrew plancha to the floor. Guerrero then goes for the Three Amigos. Ray hits a head scissors on the last one and sends him into the ropes. Misses the 619. Guerrero with a big backbreaker. And then Guerrero hit his Three Amigos. Misses the frog splash. He countered a magistral cradle by Ray. Gets a near fall. Ray then hits the 619. He's bleeding from his mouth here. And then goes for the West Coast pop. It's countered by an Eddie powerbomb for another near fall. And then Ray hits a Hurricane Rana. Hooks the leg and gets the pin out of nowhere. This was 12 minutes and 23 seconds. However, I remember distinctly in this match that Ray was having problems with his mask. And I remember watching this, seeing that these two were a little off. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, because of this mask problem. But I watched this. No sense of it. So what do I do, Wei?
Uh-huh.
I look this up online. The actual time when it aired was 12 minutes and 39 seconds. The edited version, 12 minutes and 23 seconds.
Oh, my God.
Meaning they edited out 16 seconds. And how did I know that? Because I stopwatched the fucking match. That's why you time matches, folks. Because one time out of a million, there's a good reason for it.
Fair point. Wow.
I have won this argument.
Yes, you have.
Well, Agnew better be listening to this.
Yeah, thank you, John, for timing.
12 minutes and 39 seconds, the actual time of this edited down match on DVD.
Well, the unfortunate drawback of a match like this, you know,
is high expectation.
Yeah, we've seen it so often. We've seen arguably better Ray and Eddie matches out there, with both guys a little younger and in slightly better shape, wrestling a more exciting style. But this is still a very good match.
It is still very good.
More of a focus on psychology, I felt.
I think if you went into this expecting their cruiserweight showcase of 97, you'd be disappointed. But I like this. This was a fine opener.
Yeah, it was just slightly different. A little slower pace and more just kind of more thought out, more thoughtful. It was still good. But
this was also the beginning of what would be a feud that wouldn't culminate and finish up till the fall. They did that. This would go into the Dominic storyline. Mm. This was the absolute first seed of what was going to be a very lengthy feud and a very successful one on television.
That's almost a little unusual. You usually get the blow up at Mania.
Yeah, this was the opposite. Backstage, JBL is with his group at the time, the Cabinet, the Basham Brothers and Orlando Jordan, carrying the world the WWE title, and they walk up to Triple H and Ric Flair holding the world title at the time on Raw. And they jokingly make fun of him, calling him the wrestling god. And JBL points out he's a champion that has never lost, as opposed to Hunter with all of his reigns and having lost the title. And Hunter tells him to keep telling people that he's good, and one day people will actually think he is. And I think this was all designed to be a swerve, making you think that maybe these two are going to come out of this as champions and face off. And that would be, I think it was just thrown as a swerve for people, knowing that neither would be champion after tonight.
To me, it just felt like another case of like Hunter trying to out-heel another heel. Like, to me, I just felt like JBL came out of this looking like a weaker heel, and even in some cases looking like a little like a baby face. You know, you've seen it with him doing it to Orton. In this case, it's just JBL.
Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider are shown in the crowd. You know, for LA, This was the highest caliber of celebrity we got.
Adam
Sandler.
The
dude from Deuce Bigelow.
Oh, Adam Sandler is a big name.
Okay.
I'd say.
Yeah.
But yeah, for LA, not really the highest caliber.
Up next
What were you expecting, like George Clooney to show up?
He could have been. He would have been scouting Stacey Keibler.
Yeah.
First ever Money in the Bank ladder match. Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Shelton Benjamin, Christian, Edge, and Kane. And Benoit came out 25 stitches, they claimed, over his right eye. Don't know if it was quite that many, but nonetheless, his eye looked a mess from that headbutt to Tomko on the Raw we reviewed last week.
Mm-hmm.
They all fight in the aisle as Kane comes out last. Bunch of dives to the floor, ending with a somersault dive by Kane and then a crossbody to everyone by Kane, including Tomko.
Did you say a somersault dive by Kane?
Sorry, somersault dive by Benjamin, and then it was Kane with the crossbody.
I'm pretty sure I've
Thank you for correcting
I've
that.
I've never seen that.
Kane then gets the ladder, takes out Edge and Christian. There's a drop kick by Jericho off the top to the ladder onto Kane. Benoit jumps off the ladder and applies a crossface to Kane in midair, then a crossface to Edge. Kane slams the ladder onto the left arm of Benoit repeatedly, and this would be the story for Benoit the whole match, is that his left arm was numb. He had to fight with his right arm and everything for the rest of the match. This left arm was just completely limp.
Mm-hmm.
Edge goes for a spear, ends up taking a flapjack by Benjamin into the ladder. Five of them get onto two of the ladders with Benjamin and Edge left while the others fall. And Benjamin hits a T-bone suplex off the ladder. Just so many different spots in this whole thing. Jericho was climbing up the ladder. And then another ladder was kind of ascending from the mat. And Shelton ran up the ladder, clotheslining Jericho off, which got a really big reaction. Kane goes to chokeslam Benjamin to the floor. And as he's going over, Benjamin's foot gets tied up in the ropes. Tomko is setting up the ladder. He's hoisting Christian on his shoulders. Kane stops them and then tips the ladder, sending Christian to the floor as he's caught by Tomko. And then Kane and Jericho are on the ladder. It tips over. Benoit is climbing up at this point. He sets up the ladder, only using one arm to set up the ladder. Then he climbs this ladder in the corner, hits a diving headbutt to Kane. The stitches rip open as he hits here, and he is selling like he is about... like he was really hurt.
Ugh.
And Benoit and Kane then climb, headbutts Kane off, and then Edge just hits this massive chair shot to the bad arm of Benoit, and Edge climbs up at 15 minutes, 18 seconds to get the briefcase. So quite a showcase here for these six and getting the ladder match over. And I thought delivering here at a time when expectations were very high for ladder matches.
Absolutely. I feel like this match will probably be remembered mainly just because it was the first Money in the Bank ladder match. But just as a match itself, I thought it was very good. The flow was just very well designed. One big spot after another. I feel like, obviously, Benoit here getting the biggest babyface push. And then Edge basically coming in at the end and just taking all of it. Good for both guys. Good for everybody, really.
So of course,
Benjamin too, a lot of shine here.
This was certainly at a point where Shelton, there was in 2004 after the draft that he beat Triple H, but in 2005 people were so high on Shelton Benjamin, and this match really helped him get over. Even in defeat here, mm-hmm. he was still the Intercontinental Champion, and he became a staple of these Money in the Bank matches. Unfortunately, never getting past that level, really. He just became someone very entertaining to watch, but never the guy they'd put over in one of these matches. I found it entertaining on my copy here. They had an ad for the latest Tough Enough DVD set featuring Daniel Puter, The Miz, and Ryback amongst the contestants.
Ooh, wow.
From this Tough Enough. Eugene then comes out. He's so excited to be at WrestleMania. He cites his favorite WrestleMania moment when King Kong Bundy slammed a midget and says that midgets in WrestleMania are awesome. And then he's interrupted by Muhammad Hassan and Daivari, who come out, and Hassan complains about the bigotry of the audience, how he's never been pinned in his career, and he's taking a backseat to a disgrace like Eugene and doing his typical shouting promo here, saying he's going to create his own WrestleMania moment as they beat down Eugene. And the crowd starts chanting for Hulk Hogan as they apply the camel clutch and Hogan's music hits. The crowd explodes here for Hogan, who had been inducted into the Hall of Fame the night before. They stomp down Hogan, who then makes his big comeback, hits the big boot, throws Hassan to the floor. Daivari then hits a chair that Hogan no-sells to the back and hits the big boot, tosses Daivari to the floor, and then does like a 8-minute posing routine. The crowd just, they loved Hulk Hogan on this particular show. I don't know if he'll get this kind of reaction this year, but in 2005, my God, was this man over at WrestleMania.
Did he make any more appearances in the WWE after this?
Yeah, this was right after this. They would do the setup where it would be Hogan and Michaels against Hassan and Daivari at the next pay-per-view, and then they'd do Hogan and Michaels at SummerSlam that year. So this was the start of his... at least miniature comeback.
Mm-hmm.
One of many. The stars were out because then we cut to David Arquette alongside Linda and Brooke Hogan in the front row as Hogan's doing his posing routine. There was no sign of Eugene here during this celebration of Hogan. Eugene just disappeared into thin air. And then as Hogan's leaving, the U.S. flag comes over the giant screen, making me proud.
Beautiful moment.
Yes. Then they aired this video for the Randy Orton Undertaker match and all the legends that Randy Orton has gone through. And then they cut to Taker's WrestleMania opponents, very similar to the video we saw on the Raw last week. Orton RKOing Keebler. And then an angle on SmackDown where Bob Orton Jr. got on his hands and knees begging The Undertaker to have mercy on his son. And it was all a swerve as Randy came from behind an RKO'd Taker. The highlight of this was Bob Orton's reaction to The Undertaker being flattened in the ring as his boy had taken out Taker. Bob Orton Jr., always one of my favorites, whether it be in the ring or in situations like this where his facial expressions, just tremendous. And another guy who went into the Hall of Fame the night prior. So they had this extremely elaborate entrance for The Undertaker with druids and torches. And then he glides to the ring, which just puzzled Taz at how he is gliding down the entranceway. Cole calls The Undertaker's victims a who's who in sports entertainment, which would mean omitting a number of some of these past victims. Taker actually came out first here, followed by Randy Orton. And it was Michael Cole and Taz calling this a Raw versus SmackDown match. Orton slaps him to start the match and then hits a drop kick and early on goes for the RKO but gets tossed over the top to the floor. And Taker hits this leg drop on the outside of the apron. Taker gets the advantage. He's wearing him down, hits these pair of splashes in the corner, snake eyes. And Orton cuts him off with his back elbow and attacks him. He's getting tons of boos from the crowd as The Undertaker then sits up, leads to a Randy sucks chant. Orton goes for a clothesline and then hits Taker in the face. Orton then takes this bump. There is a dragon sleeper applied by The Undertaker, which is banned in most jiu-jitsu classes.
Is that right?
This was my first day at Toronto BJJ. They applied a dragon sleeper saying you are not allowed to do this in training.
Interesting.
Because it can break your neck pretty easily.
Oh, okay.
If as a shoot move.
Rather than put somebody to sleep.
No, Ultimo Dragon. He was very aware.
How about the taking care of business?
The TCB?
Yeah.
I don't know. You would have to run that by your instructors and find out if that's allowed or not.
That's what he used to call this move? What a terrible name.
TCB.
Yeah.
Orton then hits a power slam and a two count, hits a bunch of punches in the corner, blocks the last ride, and then Orton is thrown into Earl Hebner. Taker goes for the last ride, but Orton falls down on him here. So then Bob Orton runs in, hits The Undertaker with his cast. Bob Orton's got the cast on, hits him. Taker kicks out for a huge pop. Bob's facials are just great here. And this was the point where the crowd was totally into it.
This was the first near fall that you could justifiably see somebody losing. Taker losing.
And this was the first year the streak was a big part of WrestleMania. And Taker comes back with a big boot to Orton on the apron. The chokeslam is countered by Randy with an RKO in midair. Looked awesome.
Great counter.
And Taker kicks out again to a big reaction. Orton then calls for the tombstone. Taker reverses it, and he hits the tombstone, pins Randy Orton 14 minutes, 15 seconds. I thought just a really solid last couple of minutes and the near falls that the crowd totally believed in. And going into this WrestleMania, you really thought there was a good chance Randy Orton would end the streak based on his gimmick and the streak not being at the level it is now.
Yes, and also the fact that Randy Orton is a younger guy, and you know, the idea is that if anybody is to take that streak, it would have to go on somebody younger who would benefit from it for years to come. And I think you could definitely believe Orton would be a part of that.
And I was one of those people who thought Randy Orton should have beat him that year, and I was completely wrong, I feel. Mm-hmm. Now looking at what it's become, I mean, that has become the key part of WrestleMania most years.
And really what makes these matches are really those near falls.
Yeah.
You know, how well can they book you to believe that these near falls will actually work out, and they always manage to fit in at least a few in there. If this match were to happen again right now, guaranteed you this match wouldn't probably end with that tombstone. It would probably continue going for like 10 more minutes of near falls as well, which is what makes it so. It is, you definitely do have to suspend your disbelief at how these people are able to kick out all of a sudden at WrestleMania and not on Raw.
It's the biggest show away. They've got that extra.
They've been training harder.
Fire under them.
Yeah, they've been eating better. But who cares? It's so much fun.
Didn't have to work house shows that weekend?
Yeah, that's it.
Come on. Next video was for the women's title match, featuring an angle where Trish interrupted the unveiling of Christy Hemme's Playboy cover, where Trish It said on the cover, WWE champion Christy Hemme, that Trish took exception to.
No, it's just false. False.
It is false by Playboy to be promoting.
Or did she did win the, what is it, Diva Search.
The Diva Search. So she takes out Christy Hemme and spray paints the word slut over top of her back. The penmanship, or the penwomanship of Trish Stratus, did you look at how neat the lettering of slut was?
I didn't notice.
I will ask Trish about this the next time we have her on. Yeah. Of how this looked like a professional, like, billboard.
Oh, yeah?
Like, go back and watch this.
Professional slut billboard.
This was better than the match.
Wow. I didn't notice. She maybe have, maybe she practiced writing slut everywhere along her bathroom wall.
Like, you're this is spray paint. You're in front of an audience. Yeah. You're rushing on live television. And beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, beautiful.
A number of things could have gone wrong. Maybe she could have, like, spelt it wrong. Salt.
Oh, it could have been.
Lust.
Get that U in front of the L.
Yeah.
Could have been a disaster on television. Mm-hmm. So, Walk, Idiot, Walk was edited off of the DVD for Christy Hemme, who came out to this generic track with her secret trainer, Lita, who was nursing a knee injury. For those curious why she was... For those thinking, oh, Christy took Lita's spot, it really wasn't the case. They were obviously pushing Christy at the time, but Lita was also hurt at this point. So, as you heard on Review Away last week, if you did tune in, Trish Stratus was going into this with measured expectations. I think that's a fair assessment, Way.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And this match was about what you would think. Trish came out. Her WrestleMania outfit consisted of a hat and suspenders. And then Stratus lies down to start the match, but then shoves Hemme and throws her into the steps on the floor. There were We Want Matt chants during this match. They were light, but the story had come out at this point. Matt had not, I think I made a mistake last week, Matt had not been fired yet. That would come about a week later, but the story was out at this point. He was still at home, also hurt. There was a chick kick that was caught, and Hemme low-blowed Trish Stratus.
I mean, I'm sure it would hurt.
I think it probably... Didn't you do a weigh-in for the Pillow Fight League where you asked that question?
I don't remember.
Okay. You're choosing not to remember?
I actually...
I think you did remember. Ask Chili ask that
question. What did I ask?
You asked... I can't remember. Some of the women got very offended by your line of questioning.
I probably asked questions worse than that.
Okay, well... Folks, you know how to find stuff from the past, whether it be John Pollock websites or Wei Ting videos. They're all out there. The internet is written in pen, folks, not in pencil. Hemme then goes for a sunset flip out of the corner that Trish runs into, and then Trish hits a spear. Trish is then getting in Lita's face. There's a roll-up by Hemme for a near fall, which was the one near fall of the match, and then... Christy started hitting Trish with her Muay Thai that she's been practicing. And
oh, my God. Just, like, to see Christy Hemme in her fight stance?
Yeah.
Throwing the fists up?
That was her tiger.
Oh, ridiculous.
There was a twist of fate by Christy and a kick out by Trish, and then an O'Connor roll reversal by Hemme. They were just trying to get near falls here that the crowd would buy. They got into some of it, and... It looked like there wasn't a kick out here, and the ref kind of covered for it.
This definitely looked odd. This it almost looked like a late release on Hemme's roll-up with Trish at the end.
So Trish got up and just hit the chick kick, pinned Christy at 4 minutes and 41 seconds. Certainly one of the not great matches of this card.
No, but I
think this
was
the best you would have expected.
Yeah,
though.
I will say...
A few near falls and keep it short and give Christy a few hope spots.
It was definitely not as bad as it could have been, and I thought Trish did a good job in
this
carrying.
Is better than Goldust Fandango Monday.
Yeah, sure.
This was definitely
no, they
better.
Didn't mess up. So, you know, I thought Trish did a good job carrying, and Hemme, you can't really fault her either. Somebody's so new in the business, and now you're all
this
all
is
of a sudden,
all you could expect.
You're putting her at WrestleMania... In a singles match, you know? Like, this was a girl who, at the time, I don't even know if she's any better now, but simply couldn't even really run, you know, run into the steps. It just simply didn't look like she belonged on a stage like this, much less WrestleMania.
The match ends, and they pretty much just immediately cut to the preview of the next match. Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle. And this all started at the Royal Rumble with Angle being eliminated by Michaels, and then Angle running back in to eliminate Shawn. And the storyline was that Kurt won his Olympic gold medal in 1996, but all anyone was telling him or talking about at the time was Shawn Michaels, the WWF champion, which he won his first title in 96. And they had this argument over who was the best wrestler of this generation. And this build-up was actually really great. They incorporated Marty Jannetty into it. They had Sensational Sherry used. Some great angles leading into this match. And expectations huge for this match. I mean, we talk about Ray and Eddie. This was probably multiplied by 50. This was a dream match for people. And to me, I might go so far as to say the peak point of what the brand extension accomplished, where two guys had been kept separate and they came together at WrestleMania. And this, to me, was probably the biggest intra-promotional match they ever did during that time period.
I'm actually surprised Shawn and Angle didn't work together in some other form, you know, in the few years since Shawn's comeback.
And that was only because of the brand split. Yeah. I'm sure they would have been paired together earlier had they been on the same show. Yeah. I mean, a natural match to make. Mm-hmm. So this really had a lot of interest going into it. Of course, as we mentioned, Shawn Michaels making the transition from tights to his leather pants.
That's right.
That he would see through for the rest of his career. These are the things you notice,
yeah,
Way.
That's very important.
So much to talk about with this particular match. Michaels slaps Angle, kind of the same start to the match with Randy Orton and The Undertaker as we look back. A slap to start things. Yeah. And Angle just takes him down. And the story of the beginning here was Angle trying to out-wrestle Shawn and Shawn defending him and even getting him in the short arm scissors.
It's definitely the story that you're trying to tell, but just watching the fluidity, clearly Angle was just so much more comfortable than Shawn in this department, and it's cool to see somebody that we all like, you know, look at, wow, there's nothing that this guy Shawn Michaels can't do wrong, but then you see a guy like Kurt Angle who, you know, despite having far less time in the industry, is able to do just something like mat wrestling so much better.
And we should mention with Cole and Taz calling the Taker Orton match, Ross and Lawler called this one. So they're kind of saying that, you know, Angle wasn't really prepared for this wrestling that Shawn was trying to grapple with Angle here. And the referee separates them, and Angle hits him with a sucker punch as they kind of get into a bit of a brawl now at this point. He's going for the ankle lock. Michaels is escaping it, and a clothesline sends both to the floor. Angle lifts him for this angle slam on the floor, but instead of dropping him on the mat, runs him into the post to sell Michaels' problems with his back over the years and kind of tell that story. There's back and forth chance here for both men. A pair of belly-to-belly suplexes by Angle. Michaels then counters another Angle slam with an arm drag, and then back body drops Angle to the floor and hits a crossbody off the top to the floor.
It was a crossbody that almost looked like Michaels caught Angle in the face with his knee.
Yeah, and that probably was, because you saw Angle then bleeding from the mouth, so probably did eat a knee on that spot. I was trying to figure out when he got busted open. Angle then tried for a German off of the apron, which was a spot he would always tease. And in TNA, Petey Williams would actually take this into a guardrail. It was either Petey or AJ Styles.
From Angle?
No, it was an AJ versus Petey match. I think it was AJ, actually, who took the German off the apron into the steel barricade. It was like, God. The whole point of this spot was to tease it and not actually do it. Therefore, you get the reaction of the people, but don't actually do it. Thankfully, Angle never took. Angle then, Angle is taken off of the apron by Michaels elbowing him, and then hits a low blow that sends him to the floor. The fans are booing. Angle is sent onto the table, and Michaels hits this reverse cross body off the top rope onto the desk, which fails to break. So that must have felt great.
This table, this announce desk table, like, it's been around now for, what, 15 years?
Yeah.
And we still have these issues. Like, is there no button somebody can press under?
Well, the problem is it's got to serve as an actual, like, support system throughout most of the show, but then it does need to break, too.
Yeah, but this is the same company that's launching a whole network. Like, this is a company on the cutting edge of production technology. You're telling me that you can't come up with a better table that can break when you want it to and not break when you don't want it to?
We just got to hit the right spot.
This company makes a Hell in a Cell. This company designs the Elimination Chamber and the Punjabi cage. You can't come up with a better table than what we have here.
They return to the ring where Michaels does a kip up after hitting a flying forearm and then hits a top rope elbow drop. Angle just drooling blood at this point. Angle catches a Sweet Chin Music and applies the ankle lock, which Michaels finally makes the ropes, and the crowd boos this. Angle then rolls through on a sunset flip for another ankle lock. Michaels counters that with a roll up for a two. Then an angle slam is hit to Michaels after catching his leg, and then Michaels kicks out of the angle slam. Angle misses a moonsault. Then
he looked like he really like hurt his arm on this landing on this moonsault.
Angle was certainly beat up here during this match. Michaels climbs up and hits a running suplex off the top. It's Angle that runs up and suplexes Michaels off of the top for another near fall. And Angle is just yelling at Michaels to tap out. Michaels staggers to his feet as Angle is just yelling at him. And out of nowhere, Michaels hits the Sweet Chin Music for the double down spot. And there's this long delay. He reaches over. Angle kicks out of two. And then out of nowhere, Angle applies the ankle lock once again. Michaels is trying to kick away, but Angle won't let go. He traps the leg. And at 27 minutes, 26 seconds, Michaels taps out. One of the all-time great WrestleMania matches.
This whole final ankle lock segment was just some of the finest selling I've ever seen to end a match by Shawn Michaels. I mean, this ankle lock, it lasted for, you know, a lot longer than usual, but just the amount of tension that they're able to generate simply by Shawn Michaels looking like he's about to, you know, like he takes you through stages, through the levels of pain that he's enduring. So you get the initial panic, and you get to the point where it doesn't hurt so much, but it's still does hurt, and then to the point where you think you can get out, but then you realize it's no use and your only option is just to tap. I thought it was great, and I thought JR's call to match that whole little bit of tension was just perfect to match that level of excitement.
This was just an incredible match. Bobby Heenan watched this live, said it was the best match he has ever seen in his life.
Wow.
That's how much the guys were putting it over. Just an all-time classic match, and on top of that, you got a really great finish with a top guy tapping out. And there are a lot of top guys that would not have done that finish of tapping out. But this was just great, and you got the clean finish. And they would continue this feud because Angle would eventually move over to Raw later that year.
Yeah.
And they would revisit this. But this was certainly, I think, everyone's the match you remember between
and
these two.
And also, I feel like at this point, like, Shawn, I don't know, he probably realized that he was above, you know, anything that could happen to him. Like, at this point even, I imagine he probably felt like he was already at the stage where he was untouchable, whether or not he lost at WrestleMania.
They show a trailer, and then we see Moolin Mae Young in the audience. And the next segment was the Piper's Pit with Roddy Piper, who comes out, and he asks the crowd a bunch of questions about who is the baddest, who is the most feared man in WWE history. And he ends it with, who's the biggest rebel? And as the crowd yells Stone Cold, he yells bullshit. And this leads to Steve Austin coming out for what I can only describe as one of the weirdest WrestleMania segments ever. Piper welcomes him to Piper's Pit with a slap. Yet another slap on this card. And Austin thanks him for having him on Piper's Pit. And he slaps Piper back. And this crowd was giving Piper the lovely what chance, which clearly rattled this man. He was very much transfixed with fighting these what chants, which only propelled them to get louder.
I'm sure he knew, like being in a segment with Steve Austin, I'm sure he would have expected it. And
I don't know if he did. It seemed like he wasn't prepared for them, and he felt like, you know, as a guy that's a great talker,
yeah.
No, I'm going to fight these chants. I'm going to beat the crowd.
He started to play around with it, and I feel like anytime we still see this happen today, whenever the what chants happen, it's hard to combat it, and I almost feel like the best thing to do is to just simply ignore and wait till the audience gets bored.
Or just don't give them that opening after a message. Just keep going. Like,
well,
some
that's
guys,
hard, though. You have to end your sentences anytime you take a pause, basically.
Yeah, there, some guys have it down to a science of how to deal with these what chants. It's probably being taught to them in NXT right now.
Yeah.
Piper says he was here when WrestleMania didn't even have a number, says he was a bigger rebel than Austin. Austin says the Piper doesn't scare him one bit. And they get interrupted by Carlito, who pronounces that neither of them are cool and no one wants to see them anymore. Piper says he doesn't know who this guy is and calls him Alfalfa.
I think he meant buckwheat.
I think he did too. Because Alfalfa was the one with like the greased hair that had the thing sticking up, right?
Pointy, yeah.
Carlito wants them to leave the ring, but as he tosses the apple up, Piper catches it, eats it, and spits the apple in Carlito's face. Then Carlito attacks Piper. Austin pulls him off, stomps him, and then there's an eye poke and a stunner to Carlito. The eye poke from Piper and then the stunner from Austin. And then Austin and Piper are just drinking beer after beer after beer, and it ends with Austin stunning Piper. I get the allure of, hey, Steve Austin's going to be at WrestleMania, but I thought this was pointless.
Well, I think the point was just to have, you know...
Carlito looked like a geek in this.
Well, that was the point. He was the fall guy for these two baby faces. But I think the point was to have the quintessential versions of Stone Cold Steve Austin and Roddy Piper cut promos on each other. And I never felt like they really kind of reached that heated, heated level. It's also, for me, a much harder sell for me to buy Roddy Piper on the same level of Stone Cold Steve Austin, considering that, I mean, Piper at this point looked to be in his late 40s with a giant beer belly, and you had Steve Austin, who was active only maybe like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I've just felt you got this moment out of the Hogan-Hassan deal, that this really was just unnecessary and not a good use of Steve Austin, if you're going to use this guy.
So, he's not going to wrestle. What else would he do?
Well, I don't know then what the point of using him here was.
Just to advertise him.
I guess. It was fine. This was like your unofficial intermission.
Yeah.
They voted the best trailer overall was the Taxi Driver spot with
really?
All the guys doing the...
That wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. What was your favorite?
I think I said last week I liked the JBL Cena one. I thought that was really good.
I did ask you this.
Yeah.
All right. Now we go to the main event of the show.
Okay.
Aki Bono and Big Show would have their sumo match, where Aki Bono came out to the harp. This was Japanese music number 45 on the catalog.
I don't even know if it's a harp.
It sounded like a harp.
It sounded like some Asian music.
New Age Asian music.
Yep.
This is the Mandarin special during lunch that we'll be playing.
Yeah, some gongs in there.
Yep. The ropes have been taken down at this point.
Yeah, they've really like changed that ring quickly.
One of the keys to getting Aki Bono was that K-1 and Aki Bono really wanted an authentic sumo replication here, outside of it being worked.
K-1 requested this?
I think it was more so Aki Bono. As much as people might laugh at Aki Bono, he was a gigantic star at this time in Japan.
Yeah.
And this led to them getting, like, this was viewed as a big attraction for that part of the world, of Aki Bono at WrestleMania.
Oh, is that right?
This was only a year and a half after him and Bob Sapp had their New Year's Eve match, which did, like, over 45 million people on New Year's Eve.
I suppose I just don't necessarily see the appeal of having him in a sumo match when you could have had these two in a wrestling match.
He wasn't a wrestler, though.
But he wrestles now.
Well, now he does. This was 2005.
You could have taught him a few moves. This was a worked sumo match.
Well, I think that they wanted to... I don't know. I don't know what necessarily the thought process was, but in Japan, Aki Bono would be the biggest star on this show, I think.
Sure.
Big Show comes out in a robe and flip-flops, and maybe this was just... This was a crowd that you knew was going to not really understand sumo, but when they... took their robes off, the crowd gasped what they only viewed was the Big Show nearly naked in a thong.
Like, that's my whole thing is that, okay, I just don't get anybody requesting this actual type of setting.
No.
Because to an American audience, you're only going to look at it as a joke. Two big fat men in thongs.
Like, if this WrestleMania was in Tokyo, I could see this working for your live audience. But this is on pay-per-view. This felt so out of place.
To an audience that had never seen a sumo match in their life, and really the biggest takeaway from this is just two big fat men in thongs.
And really, that's the role of television then. Do an exhibition on Raw. Explain what this is, because no one knew what this was.
Yeah, but even so, you're right, they should have done that, but also...
Aki Bono was like, they did the weigh-in, and that was it on the SmackDown going into this.
But even if you explain what sumo was to an average North American audience, I don't think anybody would give a shit.
I disagree, because when we were at the Combat Games, being there live for the sumo, you ask Corey or Robin Black what the hands down the most fan-friendly event was, sumo can be incredible.
You're right.
It can be incredible. But this was just not that. Crowd had no idea how to react to this. There was a Bauer sign facing the hard camera.
Oh, really?
So maybe some court fans out there. Yeah. And the boos begin as they start here. They're going at each other. Big Show calls for a choke slam and lifts Aki Bono off his feet, but then Aki Bono tosses him out of the circle, off the ring, to the floor. And then afterwards, they shake hands and hug before proceeding to the back, and we cut to a sign that read, Sumo Time.
Yeah, okay.
This was a rather forgettable WrestleMania moment.
Yeah, I mean...
This was used as comedy when Cody faced Big Show about all his WrestleMania embarrassments. Mm-hmm.
I will say for a worked sumo match, this was actually not that bad. It was kind of exciting. A nice little throw from Aki Bono at the end. If this were real, it would probably last like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But overall, I felt like they treated this sumo stuff way too seriously. They're trying to treat it like it was a real sport when I don't think the audience was right for that. And that just makes me wonder, well, you know, maybe they could have had something better if this was some type of actual promoted match.
A monster truck match. Which Big Show is a veteran of.
Yeah, which he's done as well.
On top of a big building?
Yeah, you had Hogan there.
Yeah.
Right.
The rematch. Yeah, 10 years in the making. It was 95 they did that. Up next was the WWE title match. They showed a video, JBL and John Cena. And this was back when John Cena, he had dropped the rapping, but he hadn't dropped the delivery.
The accent.
Which you will hear in this interview I do with him, that even outside of programming, he still talked in this delivery.
That is so weird.
Well, it was a hard transition out of the rap character for this guy. Like, he was still, like... Coming out in the jerseys.
Yo, what up,
and
John? Yo.
The spinner belt.
Yeah, we gonna do this. It was like a half Bostonian, half stereotypical rapper accent.
JBL comes out. This was our first big entrance of the night with a motorcade and JBL dollar bills coming out of the ceiling.
Oh, that's so great.
In the Staples Center.
Yeah.
Cena comes out. His elaborate entrance was he had a giant spinner pendant, which he probably spent $10,000 on.
Mm-hmm.
Match begins. JBL ties him up in the ropes and is attacking the neck of Cena. And it's all Cena selling here with the sleeper applied by JBL until he finally suplexes JBL. Cena gets sent to the floor, takes a swinging neck breaker, and then there's a superplex off the top by JBL. Crowd was very dead for this. JBL comes off the turnbuckle into a power slam by Cena. And then we go into Cena's comeback featuring this hideous hip toss, a five-knuckle shuffle, and then into a big boot, JBL hits, but then Cena ducks the clothesline from hell and hits the FU for the win at 11:27. The crowd's like celebrating because it was a title change, but not the kind of big, you know, crowning of a new star. And they showed John Cena, he got the title and he bit the title, like to make sure it was real gold, and then jumps into the crowd like these Japanese fans that had come over for Aki Bono, they started celebrating it with. And I just thought this was a really flat match.
Yeah.
Really uneventful. And up until this point, Wei, I thought this was, you know, quite the show. And this match certainly sent things down a notch or two.
Perhaps it was a part of the fact that, you know, crowd kind of saw this as not the main event. But, you know, just looking at the match by itself, I found these two kind of boring together. It was a very generic power move type of matchup between these two. It was just very standard.
Yeah, it was like John Cena would go on to have some incredible matches in his career. But, yeah, this was not one. And these two, a few months after this, would have this excellent I Quit match. But this one just didn't click at all for me. They recap the Hall of Fame ceremony, everyone going in, Hogan, Piper... The Iron Sheik, this was his big year.
Mm-hmm.
And Gene Okerlund brings all of them out to introduce to the crowd, ending with Hogan. They announce WrestleMania 22 for the next year in Chicago. And then it's time for the real main event for the world title. Triple H and Batista with Motorhead playing out Triple H. And did you get the impression, Wei, that Lemmy didn't know what the lyrics were for this song?
I really did get that impression. I don't know if
this man was like French kissing this microphone. He was so close. You could not make out what he was saying because I don't think he knew what he was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I clearly didn't seem to know the lyrics to this song that I don't know how often he's played before.
You don't think this is part of the set list?
We'll have to play the game. We'll have to ask Mouth.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be.
They might have played this at shows. I don't know. We will find out from Mouth.
I imagine it's probably one of their bigger, more well-known songs, to be quite honest with you.
Now, that might have been a little goofy, but what was full-on weird was Batista coming out. This was to his old theme song, Pre-Saliva, where he comes out and he does that big pose where he, like, is taking a shit and also, like, firing machine guns. Yeah. But he did it before they had pyro for it, and it looked so weird to be doing this big, elaborate, like, posing, and there was no pyro for it. Just looked, like, wrong. Looked weird. Very strange. Crowd pops when the bell rings, which is something that'll happen at, like, UFC events for a big fight when they finally say, fight, and everyone goes nuts. This match had been built up pretty well over a several-month period, and Hunter immediately started working the lower back of Batista on the floor as he sent his back into the apron. Flair is choking Batista behind the referee's back. Batista comes back with a spine buster for a two count, and then Batista catches Hunter off the top of the clothesline and sends him to the floor. Batista is then thrown shoulder first into the steps. Batista catapults Hunter off the steps into the post, and Hunter is busted open and just flowing here. Blood going all over his chest. They had saved the blood for this match outside of Chris Benoit's impromptu blood. The referee then steals a chair from Triple H on the floor after Batista takes out Ric Flair. Flair then runs in, takes a spine buster, and Hunter then hits a belt shot as the hits Batista with the belt as the ref is tending to Flair, and then Batista kicks out at two after the belt shot. Hunter runs into a spine buster. He then Batista goes for the Batista bomb, but Hunter hits a low blow. Then Batista blocks the pedigree and hits a Emerald Frozen, watching his Masawa.
Yeah.
Direct comparison.
Yeah, it was more like he was draped along the back, but
Batista then powers up, gives the thumbs down, and hits the Batista bomb, and he beats Triple H, 21-35. There's this big pyro display for the post-match as Hunter leaves with Flair, and it was a very much similar reaction to the Cena title win. It was like, okay, this is our next generation of stars here. But it just felt like these two matches to close the show couldn't follow what had preceded them.
No, certainly didn't follow Michaels and Angle, which is definitely the highlight.
Or Orton Taker, for that matter. I thought both those matches were better than these two.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, Taker, you kind of had that history there. All those near falls were really good. These two matches were just very standard, at times almost boring matches. You know, they accomplished what they needed to do, and that's to put the title on these new guys, give them those manufactured moments, but it didn't really, they weren't exciting matches by any means.
All right. Well, that was WrestleMania 21. Before I get your final vote, what you rate this show, let's check in with the law from this particular night of April the 3rd, 2005, as Dan Lavransky and Jason Agnew had just recapped the show. They were not huge fans of it. And they chat with Dave Meltzer here on The Law right after WrestleMania 21.
Now, as we like to do every Sunday, it's time to talk to Dave Meltzer, the editor of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Dave, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
You sound somewhat underwhelmed by WrestleMania.
Oh, no, not at all. I thought it was one of the better WrestleManias ever. I mean, it wasn't number one, and it wasn't in the top three, but it was a pretty darn
really?
Good show. It peaked too early, though.
I thought I had trouble getting started. I mean, I wanted to ask you if you knew anything about Eddie Guerrero, if he was, like, ill, or he just didn't seem to be on the same page with Ray at all in that match.
I don't know anything. I just thought that they were both nervous. You know, they put a lot of pressure on themselves to steal the show and then probably got there and were told their time. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of mental things going on, you know, and I've got to think that they were really disappointed. But, you know, there's another day. They didn't stink up the place, but, you know, I was expecting, you know, it's WrestleMania, you were expecting a classic. And
you are. I mean, I didn't expect myself afterwards to be saying Batista had a better match than Eddie Guerrero.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but you know, maybe they were about the same.
I would have to. I would think it was certainly in terms of what they did. They didn't overbook the Triple H Batista match. I thought, you know, and I mean, they gave the fans what they wanted. They wanted him to win.
Yeah, but they went too long, and they didn't really have a lot of heat. Then again, a lot of matches didn't.
Well, I don't think anything really did except for Michaels and Angle. That's one of the reasons I didn't think it was that great of a show. To me, that was the only stuff that had heat, aside for the obvious Hogan pops and Austin pops.
Yeah, yeah. It was a... I don't know if the crowd wasn't well-miked or it was a laid-back crowd. It didn't... In that sense, it didn't have the feel of some of the WrestleManias, but I thought that... I thought it did have the feel I thought it did have the feel in other ways.
Right. Because I don't know. A lot of it to me was very lackluster. Like the Cena, the JBL, with that finish.
Was bad.
The finish came out of nowhere.
It was a bad. I tell you what, the one thing, you know, I mean, as a show, you know, I mean, there's two ways of looking at this thing. As a show, as for 4 hours of entertainment, I thought it was a thumbs up. I thought it was the best WWE show in a long time. For what they needed, the key elements of the show to build for the future, Batista showed me nothing as far as an ability to electrify the crowd as champion. I mean, it was Triple H's match.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Triple H did a good job, but it was all Triple H. And the second most, you know, the second guy in the match was Ric Flair, and Batista was just kind of, you know, being directed through.
Right.
And John Cena was a lot worse than Batista. John Cena was nothing tonight, And JBL worked really hard and couldn't even get a good match out of him. But, you know, I mean, it's like Cena really, he's going to have Kurt Angle and Eddie Guerrero, or he can't have a match, it looks like.
What about some of the guys like Carlito and Muhammad Hassan, who kind of, you know, as far as I'm concerned, kind of got buried by in the segments with Piper and Austin, or Piper and Hogan?
Yeah, Piper and Austin, yeah. I thought that Hassan, the usage of Hogan, I thought was good in the sense of he threw him out. He didn't leg drop him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I don't think he can leg drop him.
What?
I don't think he can leg drop him. I think his hips wrecked.
You might be right. I don't know. He looked like he was hurting pretty bad.
He was limping when he walked back at the end of that. He was limping.
He, you know, the problem, you know, I think that, you know, they kept a little bit of steam on Hassan. I mean, Carlito's just been killed underground, and he was doing so well, and he's got charisma. I agree with you on Carlito. I just thought that I think that they're, you know, in their minds, it's like Hassan got the rub because he got in the ring with Hogan. Carlito got the rub; he was in the ring with Austin and Piper. But they got the truth is that they got buried.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. To me, I didn't see the show quite as special as you did. I thought all of it was pretty lackluster, except for Angle and Michaels. To me, that was.
Oh, I loved the ladder match. You know, I really loved the ladder match. I mean,
had some good spots. Like Shelton Benjamin did some inventive spots, but overall, I didn't really think it was on par with any of the other ladder matches.
They didn't have the time, and they didn't do the crazy stuff, but I thought it was all action for what it was. I thought that the Mysterio match and the ladder match both really could have used about 3 to 5. You know, the Mysterio match could have used about 3 more minutes, and the ladder match could have used about 6 more minutes, I would say.
And what were your thoughts on Orton and Taker? Certainly a lot of our callers already are popping big for Cowboy Bob and the cast there.
Yeah, they got you got an injured guy. And, you know, Undertaker, who's an old guy, you know, and I thought that they had a nice match. You know, I mean, considering, all things considered, it was better than I expected. The Bob Orton thing was done well. You know, the near falls were good. So, yeah, I liked it.
So what do we see coming out of some of this? They had that vignette where they teased interplay between Bradshaw and Triple H. Is anything going to come of that?
I think that was just so people would go in there and just go, aha, they're both retaining their titles. And that way they thought that it would make them happier to see the pops, because they were trying to fool the smart fans into thinking, aha, they're both retaining their titles. We hate WWF. And then at the end, you get happy because both guys ended up losing.
Well, I don't know how any smart man didn't realize Batista was going over. I think it was kind of obvious.
Well, you have to be an idiot not to put Batista over.
Yeah, exactly.
And we all knew Cena, you know, was being groomed for. It was a question of, you know, I expected he was going over as well. Actually, I knew he was going over. You know, Cena's going to be an interesting one. They've got all their eggs in his basket right now as far as the SmackDown brand goes. They got the CD. They got the movie.
Right.
And, boy, tonight, I don't know. But, you know, the other thing that was really sad as far as the Batista thing goes, to me, was, like, last year, year when Chris Benoit won, it was just awesome.
It was. It was a huge celebration, yes.
You know, when Eddie Guerrero won, and it was a great finish and all this. Tonight, I mean, the real highlights of the show were Hulk Hogan and obviously the finish of the Kurt Angle Shawn Michaels match, for sure. And to a lesser extent, maybe Steve Austin. It wasn't the two matches that were supposed to be the key matches that were the highlight when the show was over.
No,
by any means.
Absolutely. And again, to me, that's why I have to see that as another problem with the show. With Edge winning the ladder match, is there talk of maybe him going over to SmackDown and challenging Cena for the title with that stipulation there?
I haven't heard anything like that.
They are gonna do some mixing up now, aren't they?
I haven't, you know, I mean, that was the plan. I haven't heard anything in, you know, 2 months, one way or the other. God knows they, you know, they need it. And, you know, I mean, it won't happen tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could it happen in 2 or 3 weeks? I hope so. You know, I hope that there's some mixing up, you know. I mean, but the key mix-ups, you know, originally, as we've talked about months ago, were Orton, and that's not happening because he's hurt, and Cena. And, you know, that just doesn't make any sense right now for Cena to go over.
Well, no, not now that he's won the belt. No, he's got to stay on SmackDown, you'd think.
Right, unless Batista goes over, and then that's not happening because, Batista's not going to the other side to leave Triple H work.
Well,
especially
exactly.
Triple H isn't going to have a big program with Cena and then have Batista go on the other side.
No, Triple H needs to get title reigns 11 through 17 in there, right?
Oh,
so, yeah,
as
you know.
As possible. I tell you what, you know what's funny is when he was on the top rope, And you know, he that one spot where he jumped out to where he was going to meet, getting it with a clothesline.
Right.
I was going like, oh my God, because I'm thinking about, he's so blown up, right?
Yeah.
And he's jumping on the top rope, and I was thinking, here's another Vince McMahon. But, you know, thank God, nothing like that
happened.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes, absolutely. Got to wrap up here, but quickly, Dave, I want to talk about this just because it seems the story's breaking today. It appears that the WWE has signed a deal with the USA Network.
I think it's going to be announced on Raw tomorrow night, but I'm not sure of that, but that's the impression I got. But
any details so far? Or like?
No, I just heard that I actually heard on Wednesday, and it was from the people at Spike who said, you know, that the deal signed,
okay.
You know, with USA. So, you know, that was the first I'd kind of heard about it. You know, today it's kind of really broken everywhere. But, I don't know financially if they got, you know, what they wanted.
Right. It seems to me.
If they did, then Vince needs to kiss someone because, my God, he had no leverage and he needed it bad.
Well, it seems to have happened very quickly, so I would have a feeling that, I guess, I mean,
well,
U.S.
It had to, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, my impression is that in June, there's going to be a big media blitz by USA. They really want to make the most out of getting WWE back.
Right.
You know, it's a big thing to them. The way it was told to me is that, you know, USA is bordering on number one cable, and the addition of Raw will put them over the top most likely, and that was worth spending money to be number one in cable again.
So there you have it. You have heard what the Law crew had to say about the show, and Dave Meltzer checking in. What do you give this WrestleMania? Because I really feel, up until those final two matches, this was a bit of an underrated WrestleMania. Not one that comes to mind as a great, great show, but I think one that's kind of in the upper third of WrestleManias or so.
Certainly. There's almost like a steady climb towards the middle of the match, culminating with Angle versus Shawn, and then it slowly went downhill after that.
Yeah, it peaked early.
If you were to watch this show in reverse, starting with Hunter and Batista, and then going back to maybe Eddie and Ray, you might have a better enjoyment of it. I give the show a solid maybe 7 out of 10, simply because Ray Eddie was very good, Money in the Bank was very good, Taker Orton was good too, and you had one of the best WrestleMania matches, I feel, of all time in Michaels versus Angle. So 7 out of 10.
I have it as 7 out of 10 as well. I think one of the more kind of underrated WrestleMania matches. You don't always hear people rave about Michaels Angle when you talk about big WrestleMania matches, especially involving Michaels, but this was one of the best WrestleMania matches, I feel, in history. So, a good card. Not the best WrestleMania of all time, but certainly not a bad show, I feel. At this point, let's head into the feedback, and we'll start off here. You know, for years, I felt like this show was not very good at all. After watching it again, I can only conclude that this was a product of a high school me being too much of an internet guy in my wrestling taste. thus leading me to focus on the bad parts of the show. The sumo match, the awful women's match, and the anticlimactic nature of what would be the first of Cena's 14 world championship wins certainly still stuck out as the low points of the show. However, I now realize how much of this show was solid, with a good opener, the first Money in the Bank match, the first actual Undertaker streak match, and the classic between Michaels and Angle, which helps to show why Shawn is the greatest worker of all time, and a solid main event. Overall, this was a very good Mania, and I rate it 8 out of 10.
Alan Jones, if the two title matches would have delivered, then this would have gone down as one of the greatest WrestleManias ever. But they didn't, and that left a flat ending to the show. Everything up to Shawn Angle is fantastic, and things kind of got closed with a whimper. Still, this is a historic show as it cemented the rise of Batista, Cena, and Orton as main event players. It also has the two great matches with Shawn Angle and Money in the Bank. Definitely a good Mania, but it could have been much more.
Chris in Ottawa, what shaking, brother? WrestleMania goes Hollywood. What a stupid idea. Thankfully, I completely disagree. I loved that gimmick that year. I thought it was great. With the movie trailers.
Yeah.
Great tie-in. I liked it quite a lot. Thankfully, WWE would see the error of their ways soon enough and return to making the Showcase of the Immortals a stadium event as they did for Mania 17 through 19. That I will agree with. I always feel WrestleMania should be in a big venue. I'm parroting everyone else, but Michaels and Kurt Angle stole the show this night. In one of Shawn's DVDs, he states that he may have had better matches, but there was no match in which he was in better shape than this one. What a clinic. Tough one to follow for sure, which brings me to Triple H. The 2000s confirmed that the game would never be regarded as one of the very best, as he was proven incapable of having a great match with anyone, anywhere, anytime, even in the main event of WrestleMania. Can Piper and Austin sell a pay-per-view if they promise to just slap each other a bunch? I'd buy that show. That was really great.
Derek from Denton, Texas says, this is probably one of my favorite WrestleManias that I've seen. I was extremely excited for the Eddie versus Rey match, and I enjoyed their whole feud during that year. My favorite match from this Mania, though, was HBK versus Kurt Angle. Anytime either of them were in the ring during this time, I was instantly excited and ready for an awesome match. Back then, I thought the two main event matches were awesome, but now watching them, not so much. They were good. One thing I loved about the WWE in 05 was that for one whole year, there were feuds that I loved and are still awesome to this day. I give the show 9 out of 10.
Let's go to Robert here. Hey guys, I did like the pay-per-view. It's not as magical as X7 or 20, but it gets there. Great action from start to finish. Eddie and Ray started nicely, though I would question the placement of the match as a curtain jerker. Benoit landing a headbutt to Kane from one of those ladders sounded sickening, and watching him bleed from an already stitched head from doing so does not look pleasant. The crossover feuds like Taker Orton and Angle Michaels were reasons why WrestleMania matches don't necessarily need 50 ECW-type high spots for the to please the fans. I did realize something. Angle did not use a single German suplex in the match. I also realized that it was the SmackDown guys going over in each crossover. Angle and The Undertaker. Now to the main events. I liked when the cop vehicles escorted JBL to the ring with flying dollar bills. I was eating ramen noodles. I can't read today. While the match played, because I really don't like Cena besides his rapper act. If memory serves, I believe he was leaving it behind to be a top face. Finally, it's a waste of Big Show losing a match to Aki Bono without any after build to it.
Gorav, this WrestleMania would rank among my top 5 manias of all time. The fans wanted Batista to win the title in the main event, and WWE gave them what they want. Now, 9 years later, fans don't want Batista to win the title. It's incredible. Why did Hunter have to come out to the ring with Motorhead playing his theme song live? He's a heel and he shouldn't have a cool entrance. It always bothered me when heels came out in a match in such cool fashion. You automatically feel like cheering for the guy. Punk got cheered when Living Color played him to the ring at last year's Mania. Heels shouldn't be cool, period.
Okay, let's go to Ronaldo. Thinking back to this WrestleMania, I was dumbfounded at how WWE chose Batista to be the breakout star in Evolution ahead of Orton. Quite frankly, I only saw him as a musclehead and that's it. Rest of the card ranged between awesome and generic. You had your standard diva match where Trish tried to do the impossible to save her match with Hemi, and you had Michaels versus Angle in a phenomenal match. Aki Bono Big Show I will take as the special attraction every Mania has got to have, and Cena JBL was okay for what it was supposed to be, but really the highlight of the whole deal were the spoofs of famous movies. Christy Hemme has got a career in phone sex, and she doesn't even realize it. Waste of talent. Good show.
Our next piece of feedback is from Joey in Australia, who says, This WrestleMania came around when I was at the height of my fandom as a 12-year-old. Solid undercard, and it felt like every match had some sort of meaning and story behind it. I always see the show as the kickstart to the next generation, as Cena and Batista both won world titles, and it was clear the company were getting behind these two. HBK Angle was pretty much the perfect match, and the moment felt better after the match when the cameras didn't cut away and show the crowd give both guys a standing ovation. It made the match feel even more great. Anyway, great podcast. Keep up the great work.
Aram, I loved the 21st edition of WrestleMania. My most cherished memory was that it was the last wrestling event that any of my friends was curious about. After that, I never heard anybody mention WWE again or that anybody was interested if I mentioned it. I was stoked for Aki Bono since I had started watching MMA and seen some of his legendary fights. Randy Orton, Batista, Triple H, John Cena, Big Show, Taker. They are still on the WrestleMania card to this day. Anyway, I clearly would love if they went back to the formula when a new main eventer gets his chance and it starts at Mania, then at the smaller pay-per-views.
We go next to Mark in Manchester. I attended this event and still have a JBL $100 bill, mainly as I can't spend it, as unfortunately it isn't actually legal tender. This was a show where the undercard was a lot more spectacular than the title matches and peaked with Angle and Shawn. It almost made the trip worthwhile by itself, although I did also enjoy seeing Motorhead play Triple H's theme. The highlight of the weekend was the Hall of Fame ceremony with my introduction to the Iron Sheik, who stole the show even though there was Hulk Hogan's induction and an appearance by Stallone. Overall, it was a good trip, although I have no real desire to visit LA again, as I was left a bit underwhelmed by the city. Sorry, LA natives.
Oh, jeez. You're gonna get hate. Devin from Calgary. I first watched WrestleMania 21 in July that year when my dad bought it on DVD. The only reason my dad bought this pay-per-view was to see the main event between Triple H and Batista. This was also the first event I ever watched, as I had just started watching WWE at the beginning of July that year. Back then, I really enjoyed the show. It took me and my dad 2 to 3 days to watch it back then, as we watched WrestleMania and then the Hall of Fame. I was a big fan of Cena and Batista back then, and thought that they could be big names in the WWE, and man, was I right. The sumo match was what it was. I didn't like looking at Big Show's bum. The Undertaker and Randy Orton was very good, and they would have a feud later on in the fall on SmackDown, which I thought was entertaining. I enjoyed the match between Ray and Eddie at the beginning. Feud in the summer over Ray's son Dominic was a bit entertaining. I still miss Eddie to this day. Cena won his first of 14 titles on this show. He has won 14 titles in 8 years. That's almost like 2 a year. I also really enjoyed that year's Hall of Fame class.
All right, we go to Paul Lord from Houston, who says, this is around the time period that I checked out from wrestling until 2013. It's like my wrestling sixth sense knew that the Cena era was about to take place. I thought this was a very entertaining show. The lower quality matches were the sumo and total matches, so at least they had something to offer. Although I did think Triple H put in a solid performance. By the way, what the hell was Triple H sipping out of that black Dixie cup during his chit-chat with JBL?
Who knows? Who knows? Next up, I attended this WrestleMania. This is from Drinks, Waffles, Waffle Blood.
Maybe that's what Triple H was drinking.
Yeah, Waffle Blood. I attended this WrestleMania and ended up sitting next to a guy with Kurt Angle and Stephanie McMahon tattoos. The show itself was fun. I really dug the mock trailers and liked that they montaged them to open the show with the debut of the Austin Gladiator trailer. Eddie and Ray opening the show was almost as good as Bret Owen. There was a group of people around me that were extremely behind JBL, while a group in front of them was into Cena, and it led to a profanity-laden debate, which I found more entertaining than the match, which seemed pretty short at the time and made me wonder if it broke 10 minutes. Thankfully, I timed it. I was lucky enough to be seated in front of the little stage thing set up for Motorhead. While they were getting set up, Triple H appeared and ducked behind the stage platform thing. While he was doing that, a guy behind me yelled, "I see you," to which Triple H yelled back, "No, you don't." Overall, the show was pretty good. Despite the Trish, Christie, and Big Show matches, I found myself really enjoying it. It's surprising to think that Cena's title win here would be the last time to date when someone has won their first WWE title on the biggest show. It wasn't a great show, but it was fun.
Shy from Israel.
My bittersweet personal story about WrestleMania 21.
Oh, dear.
In late 04, after years of being a diehard wrestling fan, me and my brother Elad decided to make a dream come true and attend a WWE event, and what bigger stage than the granddaddy of them all? We purchased two floor seats to WrestleMania, $500 each, and planned a one-month trip to the U.S. In the meantime, we applied separately for non-immigrant visas, but to our shock, we got the big boot from the embassy. Then we got granted a special permission to reapply, usually a three-month gap. This time we issued it together with the Mania tickets in hand, asking just to see the show and go home. But the officer looked us straight in the eyes and threw us over the top rope. Unfortunately, we didn't manage to sell the tickets on time, so we still have them as a memorabilia. To this day, I still cringe every time I hear Cole say, the Staples Center. But the Avigan spirit wouldn't die. We then planned a one-month trip to Canada, which started as a consolation prize and ended up as one of the best times of my life. We toured the country inside out, attended both Raw and SmackDown tapings, and got the chance to meet Chris Benoit, RVD, Chris Jericho, and Edge. Wow, you came all the way down from Israel. That's so awesome, is what Edge said to him.
Wow, so $1,000 on tickets that you couldn't use.
That's kind of sad.
Wow, yeah. Man, I would just be irate.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it this way. He paid $1,000 to be able to tell the story on Reveal Right Way, which is worth way more than that.
Maybe he got a bargain.
Yeah.
Well, we'll finish off with David Duffenberg. This WrestleMania was almost one of the greatest shows of all time. The first half of the show was simply outstanding. The first Money in the Bank was the birth of what is one of the most exciting gimmicks in WWE today. Undertaker and Orton was the last time I actually believed Undertaker might lose. Orton was a hot young heel, had a great legend killer gimmick, and would have been something he could still use in his promos today. I'm glad it didn't happen because I can't imagine the last few WrestleManias without the streak being a major focus of the show. The main issue was still the two title matches. Even though the outcome seemed to be predictable, I was hoping to at least be entertained. The JBL-Cena match was just a flat-out boring match. Cena had one offensive attack at the end that the crowd was too bored to even get behind. Batista and Triple H was better, but never seemed to feel special. Those two would later have outstanding matches, but this one definitely lacked, especially as a WrestleMania main event. Thankfully, Angle and HBK had an absolute clinic to bring up the overall quality of the show. It was a solid card, deserving a 7 out of 10. And yeah, Batista and Hunter would do the next two pay-per-views, and they would have good chemistry together, but this was a weaker match between the two. All right, well, thanks everyone for your feedback on this special Thursday edition of Review Away. We are going to sign off now, but I do want to remind people that we are closing in on WrestleMania weekend. I wanted to remind people of our WrestleMania meetup that is happening the day of WrestleMania, Sunday, April the 6th. We're going to be meeting at noon local time in New Orleans on the Sunday at the Holiday Inn New Orleans West Bank, which is 275 Whitney Avenue, which is technically in Gretna, Louisiana. It's about 15 minutes from where everything's happening if you're in the city for wrestling.
It's pretty much like, what, a few minutes drive over the bridge?
Yeah, it's a quick jaunt, we will say.
Yeah.
So Wei and I are both very excited. I'm excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you?
I'm so excited. I'm excited about just seeing New Orleans in general. So, you know, I'm kind of making my plans now, just seeing what there is to do in our downtime when we're not watching wrestling.
I will guarantee you, if you show up at our Review Away listener meetup, you will at least walk away with a Law sticker.
Oh, wow.
The much sought after stickers, Wei, are going to be available free of charge.
Wow.
At our Review Away listener meetup.
Well,
attendance might just spike now.
I'm showing up for sure.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to do a podcast. We're going to chat about what we get up to in New Orleans. We'll chat about the Hall of Fame that we're attending the night before and some other stuff as well throughout the week because some people have been asking us. But the Thursday night, we're going to be at the House of Blues, New Orleans, for the Jim Ross, the ringside event, which you can get tickets for.
What are you
going to
do then?
I am going to be hosting
these
shows, Wei. You said this on Sunday, actually.
I'm hosting it.
Ooh.
Wow.
Well, you're going to be shooting some of it.
We'll be shooting some of it. But yes, I will be there to watch John Pollock talk to John.
I really hope some listeners can make it out to that show. It'd be a lot of fun. That's where WrestleMania week is officially going to kick off.
Mm-hmm.
So the show's at 6:30 and 9:30, and you can buy your tickets now. And Friday night, we're planning to go to the Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor event that's happening in the city. Saturday, we're going to be all over the place, including
almost like a pre deal before the Hall of Fame. Marty DeRosa, good pal, listener of the show. He's going to be doing his own show at 7 o'clock at WrestleCon, and he has asked you and I to be there. I don't know what we're doing, but we'll be making a quick appearance there, and then we got a run across the corner to the Hall of Fame at 8 o'clock. Mm. So lots of stuff going on, and maybe we'll post an unofficial itinerary up on the message board so people that are in the city and want to check things out, we'll let them know where we are going to be.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to meet a lot of our listeners, a lot of fellow wrestling fans just from all over, because we don't really get a chance to see you all too much. So if you do see us, come and say hi.
Yeah, so we're all looking forward to that. In the meantime, you can go on over to liveaudiowrestling.com. You can get all of our shows on iTunes, including getting rave reviews for The Law from this past Sunday, featuring Dan Lavransky and Wei Ting.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
Great. Rave reviews for all of our shows, I think. I think you and Jay did a great job on Review of Raw. Braden and Mouth on What's Next.
That was great, too.
Tune into that.
Everything's great.
Yeah, musical chairs.
Yeah, musical chairs are always fun. I think our listeners enjoy the mixing of chairs.
Yeah.
Next week on the show, Wei, we are going to be traveling back in time.
Which WrestleMania will we be doing?
Well,
in 2 weeks.
We've gone through WrestleMania 21, and now the other WrestleMania we're going to review this year, going back to 1991 for WrestleMania 7.
Oh.
In Los Angeles.
What?
That's where the WrestleMania took place.
So that's what we're doing?
Yeah.
I thought we were doing
That's the WrestleMania we're going to review in 2 weeks from
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I thought we were
going to I'm setting it up. We are going to do next week the main event from January of 91 on NBC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I thought we had talked about a different WrestleMania, that's all.
What did you think we were doing?
I thought we were going to do WrestleMania 6 because of the Warrior.
Oh, I thought...
Did we not do WrestleMania 7?
No, Warrior 7, I thought you said... You're right. You probably did say that. And I assumed we were going to do 7 because of the Warrior Savage match that's on there, along with Jake doing the blindfold match.
Oh, okay. Well, we
what do you want to do?
We haven't done that one yet?
No.
I feel like we've
do you want to do 6 or 7? We can do either.
I don't give a shit.
Pick right now.
I feel like we shouldn't even be having this conversation because now half of our listeners will be divided.
They will be. Whatever one we don't pick, they're going to be upset about.
Yeah.
Well, wait, you got to make the decision right now because that will affect
what else is on 7?
Seven's got Hogan against
seven?
Slaughter.
I feel like we've done that. Have we not?
Okay, let's check this right now. We might have. We might have. And if we have, that'll make the decision.
Oh, how professional are we?
I have officially now forgotten reviews we've done. This has happened quite a lot over the last few months. Okay, WrestleMania. Okay, we've done 5, 4, 15.
Go to the bottom where you can see by event date.
Okay, 91. No, we haven't done 7.
All right, okay. Let's do it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Were you set on 6?
I don't care.
Okay. Next week, we're going to review the main event, which was every year they would do the big NBC special, kind of setting up their angles for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
So it's going to be from January of 91,
yes.
Setting up WrestleMania 7. We're going to review the main event next week, and then in 2 weeks, we will review WrestleMania 7 to culminate WrestleMania month.
And those of you waiting for us to review WrestleMania 6, just give us maybe 3 years.
Yeah, we'll get to it one of these years. All right, we are not going to end off with a song. As promised, John Cena, from his appearance on The Law in May of 2005, chatting with a very young John Pollock here. This is during his first reign, and to put into context, this was... he had just defended the title against JBL at the Judgment Day pay-per-view and ended the JBL feud, which had started before WrestleMania. So here to end off Review Away is myself in conversation with John Cena, and we'll chat with you next week, chatting the main event from January 1991.
Nice. That was funny.
Oh, fuck. Oh, Jesus.
Shut up.
I looked at Pamela.
And I'm like, no, this isn't a Skype call.
Moving forward now, do you think the JBL feud has now kind of reached its end? Because they're starting to tease the Christian feud over on Raw.
Man, my name is being brought up all over the place.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I've been on SmackDown since I've been to WWE. I was on Raw once. That was for the draft of last year, and I was wearing SmackDown blue. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. All I know is my name is being brought up by a lot of people who I can't fight back against. So see, they seem to be talking like Bischoff, Shelton, Christian seems to be talking about me a lot. I'm not even going to pay it any mind right now because I'm not going to give a performer that's on another program shine on my program. You know what I'm saying? On our program, because people won't be able to see us mingle. You know, if it was next to one of the big four, maybe I'd give him some shine, but I'm not going to because it's not going to go anywhere right now.
Yeah.
Between me and John Bradshaw, Layfield, some bitch quit. I don't know where else we can go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I really don't know where else we can go. I think it's time for him to take a back burner with his little obsession he's got with the WWE title and let somebody else step up.
Yeah, and I mean, there are lots of doors open. I mean,
there's a lot of people.
Jericho, the Naturals, you know, the Rock versus Rap feud, and I mean, Christian, track number 13 on your album, That's How We Roll.
Oh. But as far as that goes, right now, those guys are on another show. You know, there's a lot of people who can beat the holy hell out of me on SmackDown. Kurt Angle being one, Booker T being another. Don't forget Big Show. You know, there's a lot of people that are coming. Orlando Jordan, Carlito. These guys have beaten me. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, don't sleep on the blue roster. I mean, there's a lot of things there to be had.
Right. Now, we're also joined here by the trademark. Yeah. Now, how did you guys just meet with this album? Or have you guys known each other a long time?
It's my cousin. I've known him since I was 2 years old. So, it's one of those things where in putting the album together, life is about opportunity. And Mark is the reason I got interested in hip-hop. I'm from West Newbury, dude. That's the country. He's from closer to the city. You know, we would get together on weekends as little kids, and he would be my introduction to hip-hop. You know, he got me interested in hip-hop. I was a rock and roll guy before that. I'm talking like 10, 11 years old. I used to listen to rock and roll because that's what was on MTV.
Mm-hmm.
He introduced me to Yo Raps. He introduced me to hip-hop music. And once I got it, I couldn't shake it. And for him, it was normal. City kids listen to urban music. For me in the country, with cowboy boots and tight jeans and long hair, I was the only one with a high top fade and MC Hammer pants, and you know, so I used to get my ass beat for it. But on the weekends when he came out, everything was cool. So when it came time to even do the Untouchables or Basic Thuganomics, I got, you know, his expertise because he's been MCing since 92 or 93. I said, man, they're giving me some fucking whack music to go out to the ring to. We need to change it. Even I can do better than this. Not having ever performed before, you know, we did Basic Thuganomics, and after that, it was just so smooth. We just kept recording, man.
Right. And whose idea was it to eventually come up with the CD idea? Because this is, you've been kicking this around for at least 2 years.
No, and that's the thing. It's not.
It was weird. We were sitting in that pool table room. I remember when we came up.
Which is the fact that we recorded.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, let's record. And we recorded the theme song, and it went so smooth. We just kept doing music,
yeah.
With no intentions of it to be this big a monster. We had an album after 3 months. You know, and we wanted to release it independently with no shine or whatever. We sat on it for another 5 months, did a few more songs. We had about 30 songs. I took it to Vince and said, listen, I'm going to put this out independently, but I want to let you listen to it first. What do you think? And this is like 8 months after we recorded Basic Thuganomics. He handed the album back to us and said, listen, you put your best foot forward on this one. You give me some better work, and I'll think about it. I think that was just him challenging me to really look within ourselves and make sure we were really giving them the best product that we could.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back for another 2 years and just really honed it down, really made music.
That was actually the best thing that could have happened.
The best thing, because if we put out the stuff that we initially had, it really wasn't the best that we could do. So mm-hmm. we really went back and really focused up on you know, making it true and real hip hop, and then we gave it to him and he ran with it from there. I mean, I paid for the album myself. Vince is a promotional monster, so he's helping us out. We got hookups with Columbia. Like, I never would have had that doing an indie. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So he made it as big as it is, but we've always been recorded, man, ever since we started doing the theme song.
Right. Promotion aside, was there any hesitancy on your part to hand it over?
Absolutely
to the
not, because regardless, if Vince said, you know, it's the shits, I'm still going to release it on indies.
Right.
You know, I'm still going to do what, like, Jericho was doing with Fozzy. Jericho never bothered to knock on Vince's door as far as his stuff, because that's his business. He wants to do it his way. I totally tip my cap to that. But as far as me being a white kid, I mean, for face value, a white kid from a small town, there's no way I could have got the official stamp that Vince gave me with all the stuff that he's done for us.
Right, right. Now, as you're continuing branching off into the music as well, you got the Marine coming up.
Marine's coming out, yeah.
Absolutely. Can you give us a little background on the Marine? When are we going to be seeing that?
It's done. It's in post-production right now. Hollywood is Hollywood, so when they want to put it out, it's going to come out. I'm crossing my fingers for early fall. I know WWE Films is trying to cross their fingers for late summer. I'm a little bit more of a realist. I think it's going to be late fall. It may even spill over. You never know. It's a very classic action flick. It takes you back to the days of when action heroes were larger than life and they kicked ass. There's really no, you know, wire fighting stuff or any stuff that you're going to look at and go, it's totally unrealistic. It's just a knockdown, drag-em-all brawl, dude. It's a fast-paced, fun ride action movie.
Yeah. How much pressure is on you right now? Because, I mean, with the WWE going behind you so much, you know,
I don't feel pressure, man. None. I don't feel pressure at all. Everybody, I think if you put somebody else in my shoes, they would wake up every day sweating.
Yeah.
I realize that this is World Wrestling Entertainment. Right now, you know, I got a lot of good things going for me. Tomorrow, I could be, you know, on a curbside somewhere or at Walmart checking people's receipts, dude. Yeah. I truly love what I do right now. That shows in the ring. It shows in the music. It's going to show on screen. And if it all ended tomorrow, I'd die a happy man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel no pressure. Whatever. I just take one day at a time.
Right. How's your role changed on SmackDown since winning the big belt at WrestleMania?
They're a beast with promotion, dude. I'm everywhere but nowhere. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, put up with guys like me.
I love this stuff. It's just we travel so much as it is.
Yeah.
It's like... here it's like they talk to God and put three more days in the week, and on those 3 days I gotta do, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, for some reason they find this extra time somewhere, which I don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that's what being a champion is all about. You truly have to put the program, the company on your back and put your best foot forward. And I mean, this is what I've always dreamed of doing, so for somebody to say that it's a burden, this is totally false, man. This is real right here. This is what it's all about.
Yeah. What kind of social life do you get to maintain at this rate where you're just...
The people that I meet on the road, man. Like, tonight I'm going to try to sneak into the Jays game. Like, that's my social life for the night. Tomorrow night...
It's our social life right
here. Yeah. It's like the Odd Couple, you know? Like, that's what we do. Wherever we travel to, we try to get something going on over there. And you do. You meet such a wide range of people. It makes for a lot of great stories. We were at the end of last week... We were at a restaurant and we caught a group of kids that was on the tail end of their 21st birthday. And because it was their birthday, they demanded that we buy them a round of drinks. So we proceeded to drink with them. And at the end of the night, instead of calling for rounds of beer, they were calling for trash cans. So it makes for a good story. You never know what you're going to run into, because you do run into everybody. And that's my social circle right now, man. Just honestly, just living life one day at a time.
Yeah. Oh, do you have any stories of John Cena after he's been drinking a little too heavy?
No, I do not. That's stuff
that's on the record or off the record.
He usually blacks out. It's all right.
Just get some kamikazes going on.
Yeah, but we have fun, man. And that's why, like... I do understand that this is business. I do understand sports entertainment, but you also have to understand my viewpoint of it. I never ever thought I would be here. Even starting at UPW, doing what I did.
Yeah.
I was at UPW because I wanted a release from my 9-to-5, and I realized I could get in the ring. You know, I paid my money. I trained there. Nobody ever said, yo, you're going to be it. You're going to be the next thing. You know, I sweated it out there working Southern, Northern California, Arizona, Utah. Guaranteed I was on the fast track. I only stayed out there for a year and a half, went to Kentucky for a year.
Yeah.
But those are some of the best times of my life, because that was the beginning of doing what I wanted to do. So now that I'm up here, man, it's just the same thing. Like, I carry myself the way I carry myself. Tees and a short and clean sneakers, a ball cap, you know what I'm saying? I am what I am. You're not going to change that. You know?
Yeah. Speaking of UPW, can you kind of contrast kind of Rick Bassman to Jim Cornette? Because you got to, you know, work with both.
I hate to bash on Rick Bassman because he gave me an opportunity to get in the wrestling business. But it's two different worlds. It's absolutely two different worlds. Rick is a guy who will fill his card with big names. And that's how he develops what he would call a quote-unquote good show. Jim Cornette develops talent. He will take somebody like John Cena, the prototype, who no one has ever heard. In a matter of years, he can make the people hate me so bad that they're slashing my tires, which happened, egging my car, which happened. They'll find out where I live and throw shit in my house. Like, all this stuff happened when I was down in Kentucky. Wow. And that's what Jim Cornette does. He promotes wrestling, whereas Rick Bassman makes a good card for the people to watch. Right. That's the difference. Jim Cornette breeds wrestlers.
Right, yeah, and that's clearly Ebony Ryan's really old school there.
No.
Yeah,
he knows how to run a territory.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk about some comments. A few months ago, Batista did an interview for The Sun over in the UK.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you heard these comments, but he was saying how, you know, SmackDown's the number two brand and he wouldn't want to go over there. Now, I've got to imagine, you know, obviously Vince wants to create that rivalry with SmackDown. That was, it's got to be legit hear that.
Yeah, and it is. And that was a shot. Like, anytime anybody asked me what's the better show, I say SmackDown because that's where I hang my hat. You know what I'm saying? That's where I'm fighting every week. I'm going to say that's the better show. Mm-hmm. You ship me to Raw, I'm going to say Raw's the better show because that's where you're at.
Yeah.
It's not what, you know, what show is better or worse. A Raw athlete's going to say Raw. SmackDown guy's going to say SmackDown. The fact that Dave was like, it's the number two show and that I wouldn't want to go over there, you can print this. That's bullshit. You know, and Dave's my boy. You know, we go way back. OVW, like, I go way back with him. You know, that hurt a lot of people. And, you know, there's a lot of great athletes on SmackDown. And to be honest with you, SmackDown holds its own just as much as Raw does. And we got the spoilers on the net for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, that's true.
So even with that, you know, check the numbers. Numbers don't lie. We're still holding the rope. So for him to say it's a number two product, especially because I feel as if I'm one of the integral pieces of bringing SmackDown back to being, you know, a respectable show. Even like at the brand split, everything was kind of hurting, but everybody knew that Monday Night Raw was still Monday Night Raw. SmackDown was kind of in limbo because we lost a lot of people.
Yeah.
We put in a hell of a lot of hard work, and for here, that was a disappointment to hear Batista say that. A big disappointment.
Wow. Yeah. And then speaking of one guy who left, Brock Lesnar, a guy who, you know, I really think it was that program with you two that really...
That put me on the map.
That got everyone's eyes open to John Cena. Those promos while you were injured, I thought, were some of the best sets of promos.
Yeah, that put me on the map, and it showed that, you know, I'll take a whipping, but I won't back down from nothing. You know, here's Brock Lesnar eating everybody up, and I come out seeing some pretty... on the line stuff about Brock, and nobody ever even talked to him before. They just got in the ring, got ate up, you know. And then and then the pay-per-view at Worcester, that's the first time I ever heard my name chanted rather than Cena sucks.
That,
you know what I'm saying? And that was against Brock, like he was the dude. Mm-hmm. So, and I wore a Yankees jersey that day. You know what I'm saying? So that's
when you're over.
It was just the beginning of, I think, the fans seeing that after all the seeing through the gimmick and seeing through the bullshit and saying, okay, Cena's really a hip-hop guy. I may not like hip-hop, but the son of a bitch will stick to his guns, and he's got a little something going for him.
Yeah.
You know?
I always remember the one promo where you had, I think it was like Ace of Spades up there.
Yeah,
on your ball cap.
I'm the king, I'm just another jack-off.
Oh, and I thought, like, this guy is for real. Like, that was just unbelievable. I still remember it to this day.
Yep.
What were your thoughts on Brock leaving? I mean, it really put a lot of pressure on all the other guys to really step up. And
you know, it did, and at the same time, God, man, I wish it never happened. In the industry of sports entertainment, you know, Brock obviously left for his certain reasons, and you can't hate on him for that. If it wasn't for him, it wasn't for him. Mm-hmm. But, man, he did a lot of stuff when he was with WWE, and for him to just leave, it erases all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you got to start from scratch. We started from scratch when Brock got in. Like, he was our start from scratch guy.
Yeah.
And then for him to do all he did and then leave, it showed a little bit of, it showed a lot of disrespect to the company.
Yeah, and not just leaving, kind of a lot of interviews he did afterwards was didn't pick kind of many favors.
You can never take stuff like that back, like even the stuff with Dave, like, you know, we're still homies and everything, but man,
yeah,
you think twice about stuff like that.
Absolutely.
You know?
You think Brock will be back? Because, I mean, you look
down. Never say ever, my friend.
You look at the list of guys.
He's still 6'5", 303. You know, he won't change that.
Because I have a hard time thinking that we'll never see Brock Lesnar.
Like I said, never say never, but...
He's going to have to, you know, really earn his respect back
after
the way he went out, because it wasn't the most classy of ways.
You're right.
First, just to get your comments in on this, about the video you guys did a few weeks ago. I mean, great concept with the A-Team. Geez. Was there any talk of actually getting a Mr. T cameo in there at all?
Believe it or not, there was. And I was kind of pissed off that we didn't get Mr. T. And then when I saw Freddie Fox come out of the makeup chair, I was like, I'm glad we saved some money.
Oh, that's great.
That son of a bitch was Mr. T. Like, the way he moved, the way he talked, the way he looked. When people watch that video for the first time, if they just glance and they say, man, T put on a little pounds. Like, it's the assumption that Freddie Fox is Mr. T. So I wanted a T cameo, but at the same time, I'm glad we didn't do it because Fox held the rope.
No, it was great. And I just always thought, because going back to the WrestleMania Hall of Fame induction, you had the whole WrestleMania 1 main event there minus Mr. T. And then with the video, so is there something up with Mr. T? Like, you know, the guy's a big name, but I mean, geez, he can't be that hard pressed that it'll turn
from
down.
From what I understand, him not being there was all involved with the Mr. T camp.
Oh, really?
Yep. Which is a sad story, because you're right, it would have been good to see all those guys there.
No, yeah, absolutely. It was one name that I read, the one in this.
Synonymous, yeah.
Well, let's just talk about WrestleMania for a minute, winning the big title. Would you have preferred that had they done the title change at a later date rather than, you know, second from the top and, you know, the final shot is Batista with the title? Did you think your title change?
Man, I didn't like that.
No, that doesn't matter to you.
I never sweat the next man. I never, you know, I got a chance to have a WWE title match at WrestleMania and I walked out with the championship. I don't care if we were first. I don't care if we was on heat. I don't care if it was in the parking lot. I don't care if three people saw it. That's a moment that will forever be etched in time. I don't sweat stuff like that, dude. Like, for people to conceptualize the main event is what you make it. I was the first match at WrestleMania 20, but that was until WrestleMania 21. That was the biggest match of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I take things the way I take them. I never sweat the next man, dude, because that's when you see people go down in this business. That's when you see, you know, the super egos develop. I'm a fucking kid from West Newbury, bro. I got no right to be any bigger or smaller than the next man.
Yeah.
I take my opportunities when I get them. I try like hell to make the most of them. And, you know, you win a few, you lose a few. It was a blessing to be able to walk through the curtain at WrestleMania, because I know there's a lot of guys in the back that would have given a lot just to do that. So that was, I don't give a damn about being second to last. I don't, you know, like, that ain't me.
Yeah, well, we'll finish off in just a minute here, but being the champion now, you are the guy now on SmackDown. When it comes to stuff like ratings, house show attendance, stuff like that, do you take that stuff personally?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I keep all the statistics as far as ratings, as far as house show revenue, crowd response. I got people out surveying the crowd after the shows. I personally, I mean, if you ain't heard the stories, like, I take time, as much time as I can with the fans. There'll be house shows where I just walk through the whole building after the house show. Like, I want people to know that we got the best show on the planet. I'm not even talking SmackDown. I'm talking WWE. For a while, when Austin left, when Rocky left, when the brand split, when the XFL failed, when we had to change our name, we were up against it. We have to start over. Mm-hmm. WWE still is the same high-paced, unbelievably exciting entertainment it always was. It's just we had so many obstacles that people forgot about it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be heavily involved with that re-education process. This is what the CD's about. I'm not trying to be a rapper. We are MCs. We're trying to relate to the hip-hop crowd that, yo, wrestling's all right. There's a dude doing hip-hop over there. Hip-hop's got a voice. There's a lot of different demographics. Rock and roll, country with JBL, you know, alternative rock. You got hip-hop. There's everything over there. And the same with the movie. I'm not going to do movies. I'm not just going to say peace to wrestling and do movies. I'm going to do movies and wrestling. And I've proven that all three can be done. And guys like Jericho, like, hats off to him. Same thing. He's proven that you can kill two birds with one stone. You know, even JBL, he's got a syndicated radio show in 150 markets. He does it every weekend. Like, as much as I hate this son of a bitch, like, that's respectable. And that's what's going to bring WWE back or beyond what it was. That's everybody in the locker room's goal, to raise that bar higher than it was when the candle was handed to us. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And last question. Just came out last week, SmackDown's moving to Friday nights. What's the reaction to that? It kind of sounded like it really was blindsided.
Man,
WWE wasn't even told about it.
If I could say every curse word in the cursing dictionary, I would do it. I'll just leave it at that. I think we've been a UPN flagship for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know that the move came out of nowhere. That's what I'm most upset about, honestly. That they didn't give us a little bit of time. They didn't forewarn anybody. You know, I found out by reading in the paper.
Yeah.
And I'm asking why, and that's because nobody else knew. You know, it's a thing where, you know, hard work begets respect. We bust our ass for UPN. You know, we don't have any reruns, but 52 weeks a year. We're going to Iraq to film SmackDown. Give us a break, man. Let us know what's up. And I mean, UPN has been good to us. I'm not knocking the network, but we got a lot of work to do. Not just being on Fridays. I think the Friday move was a positive thing, because we were competing with a lot of good Thursday shows.
Yeah.
Friday market's wide open. But we got to reactivate those people that are going to turn on their TV Thursdays at 8 and say, yo, we're not on anymore. Go to Fridays. And I think, I just hope that UPN helps us out as much as we're going to help ourselves out, letting people know that it's a day later. You know what I'm saying? I don't see the move as a bad thing, because that could get us out to a better audience. Kids don't have to wake up for school the next morning. You know, there's really no knock down, drag them out competitive TV like your Survivor, your Friends, you know, stuff like that. we're going to have a better chance on Fridays. It's just, you know, you got the spoilers another day on the net. Like, a lot of stuff weighs into effect. And for them to just come out and say it, not a cool thing.
No.
This week, they get the thumbs down.
any rumblings of maybe having SmackDown go live Friday nights instead of a house show that night?
Financially, and this is, you know, the books talking, you'd have to have the road crew still on the road all week.
Yeah.
The ideal situation would be for UPN to move us to Tuesday nights.
Right.
That way we could go straight up live. And that's my dream, to take SmackDown to be a live show. But, you know, money talks, BS walks. So, yeah, I would love to go live on Fridays, but I don't think it's going to happen.